sports professor Rick Haro. Beyond the Scoreboard, the inside look at the business, marketing, endorsements, legal issues in all sports from the perspective of the fan. And we've got an amazing week. NHL, NBA playoffs going on for some, not going on for people in Chicago and Boston, but going on around the league. The NFL draft never, ever sleeps. And the NFL never sleeps. Not surprisingly, that's a theme of our show today. Jessica Gelman, the CEO of Kraft Analytics Group, tells us exactly why the Kraft organization has numbers that are bigger and better and more interesting than probably any other team in the draft, and how they use their numbers to their positive advantage as we get into the draft. A great story, not only for Patriots fans, but for fans all across the league. And the bottom line is, we'll get to the draft issues in a couple of minutes, and if you want to see the full list of 15 items, CSNNE.com, same and similar Chicago. And the bottom line is, you can tune into the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom, and the like, and watch us all over as we cover the draft from wall to wall from a business perspective. Before we do that, let's get one baseball item out of the way. According to Fox Business, Jeb Bush and Derek Jeter have combined to make a joint bid for the Florida Marlins. But it also includes a competing bid from an investor group led by Tag Romney, the former GOP presidential candidate Mitt Romney's kid. He's managing partner of Boston-based investment firm Solomir Capital. Sources close to the deal note that Marlins owner Jeffrey Loria looking for the richest offer from the competing bidders groups. Yeah, of course, obvious. Owners have yet to approve the sale, which takes some power away from Loria. They've got to approve it based on some of the loan documents. But as in any asset selling process, the auction should drive up the value considerably, regardless of the on-field performance by the Marlins. A lot of it has to do with the stadium and other aspects as well. So we'll watch that from a Boston perspective, from a Chicago perspective, and everywhere else around the league. Let's get to it. The NFL draft in Philly is a special event. Look at the sponsors: FedEx, Visa, Bridgestone, Budweiser, Tostitos, Xfinity, Skittles, Hyundai, Courtyard by Marriott, 15 in all. Oikos Triple Zero is the NFL draft experience sponsor. There's a 100-yard zip line as part of the activation in the draft area, equivalent to 25 football fields. Event officials confirmed the draft will be rain or shine, and the actual draft takes place in a 3,000-seat theater constructed outside the Philadelphia Museum of Art downtown. This year's draft will be a success with more than 168,000 fans signing up so far. The NFL experience, and frankly, folks at Radio City Music Hall, my take is, should be kicking themselves after they let the NFL draft get away 3 years ago. The league clearly sees the value of the roadshow, and it looks like a rotation process that carried the day, starting very successfully in Chicago for 2 years. Now it ought to be treated as a Super Bowl. But why are cities interested? Well, the economic impact the NFL draft provides in Philly, probably around $25 million, maybe more. The Independence Visitor Center president and CEO says you cannot put a price tag on it. The exposure, the listening, the awareness, especially because the city only pays $500,000 as part of the agreement for hosting. The rest of the sum split between the NFL and private donors, making this an attractive investment for Philly if it ends up turning a profit. And by the way, the economic impact number provides ample justification for why Chicago did it for 2 years and why other cities are looking to follow suit. Canton, Detroit, Green Bay, Jacksonville, LA, Dallas, Denver, Kansas City, just a few. So obviously, as we go forward, the draft itself is significant. But what about behavior that may cause players to be viewed differently and the NFL to be viewed differently? Well, former NFL running back Ray Rice, trying to flip the script of his life, a social responsibility program presented to the NFL teams. The NFL came to Rice as it planned its program for the fourth year of social responsibility education. Rice recorded a short interview, part of an hour-long program. He hadn't played in the NFL since 2003, after the domestic violence incident became public, and the tape of the sexual assault was released. He says, "I've been building relationships with the NFL front office, and it's a mutual thing. It's part of our responsibility to reach out on the field and off the field as well." And as we know, my take is that social responsibility cannot be mandated or required. And Rice seems to be genuinely concerned with rehabilitating his career and sharing his lessons learned. What about the revenue itself? Well, the revenue itself really important for the NFL. We understand that this is a defining moment for a lot of franchises, but many franchises are looking at the opportunity to talk about the disparity between big and small markets. Bengals Vice President Troy Blackburn gave an interview to USA Today and talked about the disparity between teams as being the largest ever in the NFL history. The share of revenues of television contracts and a portion of ticket sales, they don't share other stadium revenues with each other, leading to the rising gap. Underprivileged teams like the Rams, Chargers, Raiders choose to relocate in order to lessen the revenue gap. But by 2030, it's projected that even more low-revenue teams will face that same pressure. The disparity is this: small market teams pay over 60% of their revenues to the players, while large market teams are paying over 40%. And my take is that the NFL continues to face an ongoing issue of financial and economic parity. How to distribute revenue to its players, big market owners, and small market owners to keep them all satisfied is an ongoing concern. Not just one raised during collective bargaining negotiations, and not just one raised during the draft. Chicago, Boston, other big market top 10 value teams understand the revenue, and some of these other teams in the future may have to go past stadium issues to figure out how to make their money back. Well, that's for another day, but that also tells you why it's important for teams like the Bengals and otherwise to continue to hit and not major misses. Akili Smith and others may be considered major misses for the Bengals, but you have to see. And the bottom line of all of this is that the world is riveted to the draft, and some teams may go in with a significant advantage. Jessica Gelman, the CEO of Kraft Analytics Group, the technology company focused on data management, advanced analytics, strategic marketing. The Kraft Sports Group, which was and is the Patriots, Gillette Stadium, and the Revolution, wanted to deal with advanced metrics, and Gelman built a team and technology that transformed the business through the Kraft family and continues to power the business side of the Kraft Sports Group. She's overseen many areas for that group: business operations, consumer marketing, strategy. She worked as a strategy consultant at Mitchell Madison, a McKinsey spinoff, and played pro ball in Europe, basketball. She'd been inducted in both the New England Basketball Hall of Fame, Connecticut Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. She earned an MBA from the Harvard Business School, cum laude in psychology at Harvard, and while at Harvard, honored as the Harvard Female Athlete of the Year after leading the Crimson to consecutive Ivy League titles and NCAA tournament appearances. If you want to realize what the advantage is of the Patriots in the draft, listen to Jessica Gelman. Sports Professor Rick Harrell, the MIT Sloan Analytics Conference, and I do this even though the person who is the co-chair, founder, organizer is sitting to my right. Everybody knows that I do this every interview. Conference is getting bigger, better every year. The cacophony is now end of the day. Happy students, happy vendors, happy sellers, happy sponsors, all reveling in the fact that this conference is bigger and better every year. Jessica Gelman, CEO of Kraft Analytics Group. How's that for an intro?
It was great. Yeah, it's been a phenomenal 2 days. It's hard to believe that we're at the end of it. I think what I've heard is the energy this year has been better than ever before, and I think we added a number of new dimensions. The drone exhibition racing.
Everybody loves drones.
What's not to love?
Yeah, right.
The chess simul, where we had Susan Polgar competing against 10 people simultaneously. She's a grand chess master.
Who we're interviewing.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. Esports competition, right. Full day, accelerator program presented by Reebok. Five finalists competing for $50,000. And then that was just the side stuff, right? And then we had the 39 panels, 39 competitive advantage talks, workshops. It was...
Facts and figures on attendees.
We had 3,500 attendees. We had our largest group of sports organizations, 30% more NFL teams, 75% more MLS teams, 100% more college athletic departments. 8% of the attendees were international. So that also really speaks to the growth of analytics and the interest that we're seeing. So it's great. The other thing is we had a lot more smaller sports that were presenting this year, mixed martial arts, right, volleyball. So that it's becoming ubiquitous.
And it's not only the growth of the industry, obviously the leadership, the support, the Kraft Group, all of the effort that you and Daryl have put into this since day one, but it is an interesting global phenomena that if you look back, what year is this?
This is our 11th, yeah.
So if you look back 11 years ago and to think that a conference of primarily high-tech, newfangled technology would be this prolific, hard to believe?
It's very hard to believe. I mean, so Daryl and I were teaching a class at Sloan, and he got the job to be the GM of the Houston Rockets. And we kind of conceived of this conference over drinks and put it together in 4 months with the students who had been in the class the year before. We had 125 people attending the first conference. We had close to 200 speakers this year. So people say, you know, is this what you envisioned it would become? And I would say, no way. It's far exceeded anything that we ever could have imagined. But when you have a lot of really smart, motivated students, and you know, Daryl and I are, you know, progressing in our careers too.
Right.
It's been really fun to help drive the growth and see the reaction to it.
A lot of thought leadership conferences are euphemisms for getting people together and having drinks. This is really the definitive poster child for thought leadership, especially in an evolving and converging, an evolving and emerging area. The business is obviously evolving, and the interest of this is in different contexts as well. And so when you think about it, a lot of vendors, a lot of sponsors, a lot of students, and a lot of people want different things here. What's the kind of one common thread that brings everybody together?
I mean, it's analytics. And people actually said to me this year, You brought so many new dimensions to what the conference was offering, and do you think you should rename it? And the answer is no, because the underlying kind of subject is analytics. And even like when we're looking at esports, for example, I met with ESPN very early in the year, and we were just talking about what's new, where do we really need to focus on? And Daryl's been a longtime supporter and promoter of esports. We had our first one 6 years ago, first panel. And, you know, the ESPN folks said, this is an industry that's very early on in the analytics, and they're doing the type of work that was happening in baseball with sabermetrics, you know, 20, 25 years ago. So that's what's really fun and interesting. And the other thing, in the early days, a lot of the panels were, is analytics going to ever catch on?
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, that's not the discussion now. We're really getting into the nitty-gritty of what we're talking about. And I think, you know, we spun out the Kraft Analytics Group last May, you know, on the business side, and we'd been doing a lot of work within the Kraft Group over the past 15 years, and give the Krafts a lot of credit for investing early while the team was very good and has continued to be very good. And we were getting a lot of questions about how we were doing it. And so I think Robert and Jonathan's been speaking at the conference since the second year.
Yeah.
And Robert came last year and he came again this year. And, you know, they're just great supporters and have had great business success. And I think, you know, quite a statement that you know, this is a business that we're in now, too.
Okay. Is there an understanding that the Kraft Analytics Group has product that is effectively proprietary to service the Kraft competitive advantage? Is it scalable to be able to market around the world? Is it somewhere in between? Where's that?
Yeah, so what we think of ourselves as is we help organizations become data-driven. So we do have a technology. It's a tech stack proprietary that we use to collect the data from disparate data sources, get a single view of our customers, fold in predictive analytics. We have an in-house analytics team, and then have data visualization so you can see your data and make good business decisions. But then what really differentiates us is that, you know, we've been in the industry for 15 years, and we can do just broad consulting about what is the right data that needs to be going into it. What is the structure and the staffing that you need to have? What do you need to do from a data governance perspective? So I think that is very, very unique. And we've been getting, you know, we already have 5 clients, and we're 7 months in, and you know, we're having a lot of fun. It's been great, and I'm really enjoying it.
You watch the Patriots play and dominate everything they do, some early, some late. And everybody, whether they like them or not, respects the organization, right, and respects the way you do business, they do business.
Well, it really starts with the crafts, right?
Well, it starts with the crafts. It's very clear. But in your own way, in your own mind, how much does the whole analytic data process help facilitate the winning edge?
I mean, it's critical. On the business side, the focus is really understanding our customers and giving them a personalized experience and making changes to our business to improve their experience. So it's critical in that regard. And I mean, I'm not involved on the team side, but you know, I would say there's likely some good consistency in terms of how things are approached under the auspices of the crafts.
Go back to data for a couple of minutes and the future of it. 5 years from now, does data, there's the tension from Billy Beane, Day One, Moneyball, mm-hmm, and the dynamic structure process between the heart and the computer and the mind. Have we reached a balance? Certainly, everybody's using it. Does data dominate now? Do we need to swing back the other way? 5 years from now, where do both pieces fit?
I mean, listen, the brain is the, you know, most analytical tool that we have. I think what analytics can do is it can help put some of that gut instinct, give you the data to support it. So, you know, those scouts who have those gut instincts, there's often good credibility in them, but I think also looking at information in a different view from a different lens is really informative. So, I don't, you know, it's never going to be just look at the data, because then you're going to be missing some of the big pictures. A lot of what we talk about is how you need to be able to have information from multiple sources to actually make true decisions.
Yeah. So you're obviously happy with the progress of this conference.
I'm thrilled. Let me just tell you, the students are, you know, just one of the best parts. Obviously, working with Daryl and the excuse to work with Daryl is wonderful. But, you know, we've hired, we with the Kraft Group, Kraft Analytics Group, we've hired a number of folks from MIT Sloan, as well as people who've attended the conference going through the resume book. But the other thing that's amazing is how many of the former student leads are now in the sports industry. So there's a great, you know, this great legacy that I'm very proud of.
So the one bit of advice that you would give to the great unwashed out there who are all clamoring for jobs, acceptability, vertically climbing in their own business, what's the one thing that they all have in common that you can give them that they might be able to aspire to?
I think I would say, you know, people try to fit, you know, square pegs into round holes. And I think knowing what your strengths are and playing to those is really important. So you don't necessarily need to be, you know, coding or doing R. Not everything has to be that sophisticated. If you have that skill set, fantastic. There's one area of the business that you can be in. If you are someone who can interpret data and then help drive decisions, there's another area of the business that you can be in. And I think there isn't one right way, so find the way that's true and authentic to you.
And you've certainly done it here. This is an amazing conference. It only gets better.
Thank you, Jessica.
Really appreciate
it. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Thank you, Jessica Gelman, for her insights. And frankly, the draft is really significant for a number of reasons. But let me, before we conclude, give you my advice to the business surrounding the draft. First, to the green room players, those highly anticipated first rounders. For every sixth round Tom Brady, there's a Deion Jordan. The Dolphins moved up to the third pick in the draft 3 years ago, and he was just released. Or a Ryan Leaf. We don't have to tell his story. It's not necessarily your draft position, though it really does give you a presumption of longevity in the early rounds, but obviously what you do with that potential. How about to the marketers? In a marketing-intense industry, endorsements will thrive, but not necessarily immediately after the draft. It worked for Reggie Bush, yet Andre Johnson publicly deferred any endorsements until he proved himself. Different strokes for different folks. But the most important early indicator of a successful draft pick is not the endorsements he generates, but the work he puts in learning the system. The agents, their job is just beginning, not ending, on draft day. Some of the more public agents prolifically tout their number of first rounders, but that's not the key, nor is it the first contract negotiation, as most of these draft picks are slotted anyway. The real key is long-term financial management, character definition, and developing a sustaining brand on and off the field. The agent that takes immediate credit needs to be held to a long-term performance obligation, at least in my book. And finally, draft character will come up many times in the draft, but long-term consistency over time wins the day. Jeremy Tunsil dropped significantly in the draft last year, but he's off to an issue-free start with the Dolphins. Other character draftees have had chronic problems. Responsibility, by the way, rests with the family, the agent, the team, but ultimately the player himself. No deniability and no making excuses. So, ladies and gentlemen, the unbelievable attention over the draft continues the obvious trend where the $18 billion annual NFL industry never sleeps. Draft ratings continue to be off the charts, digital platforms abound, global draft content intensifies, and the draft roadshow circus heads either to Philly next year or Kansas City, Green Bay, Jacksonville, LA, Denver, Detroit, or other interested cities. Chicago remembers how significant it was. And again, that Radio City Music Hall negotiator who tinkered with the last NFL deal in New York and let their roadshow go to Chicago probably wishes he could have done it all over again. The draft is forever added to the Pro Bowl and Super Bowl as a host of rotating NFL assets. Well, that's our show, ladies and gentlemen. Draft-centric, a little bit of baseball, but a lot of stuff. And if you want to see the list, csnne.com. Go to Chicago as well. Subscribe to our iTunes feed. Look for us on Stitcher, Google Play, and Audio Boom. And once again, thank you, Jessica Gelman. Thanks for Jason Levine and Tanner Simpkins, who produced the show. And let's see you once again next week when we go Beyond the Scoreboard.